and General Government Committee. Full marquee of events here today, and I'd like to start by announcing that Senate Bill 43, Senate Bill 652, and Senate Bill 333 will not be heard.
Would you do that again, please?
Senate Bill 43, 652, and Senate Bill 333 will not be heard. We're going to start off with a public hearing. I'd like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 590.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 590 permits an Indian tribe member of the State Interoperability Executive Council to be a designee of an Indian tribe. We do have fiscal and revenue statements on this. And
we have Michael Mason. Is he here? Can you turn up?
Chair Haas and members of the, members of the Education and General Government Committee. My name is Michael Mason. I'm here today on behalf of the Warm Springs Tribes to testify in favor of Senate Bill 590. The situation with the State Interoperability Executive Council, which exists primarily to improve wireless communication and emergency response, mostly in rural areas. Currently, there are a couple people who have been put forward for the tribal seat or the member of an Indian tribe seat for this council. The person currently being favored for the position is a member of the Yakima Nation, so he is not a member of one of the nine Oregon tribes. However, because the point of this, at least the Warm Springs tribes understood, the point of the having a tribal member was to make sure that the tribes had someone on the council who could work with the other members of the council, primarily governmental members, on improving emergency response, on improving communication, that this would actually allow for a larger talent pool to be considered. So it is really about government to government. It's not really about whether the person, in our view, happens to be a member of one of the nine tribes in Oregon. So you have my written testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill. And I should mention that this came up because Nancy Gostaran in the governor's office pointed out to the Warm Springs tribes that they had suggested a person who wasn't eligible under the statute. So this is a response. This bill.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Mason? This came up because there was a problem or because you
yes.
see one down the road?
Because there was a problem, the person that had been put forward by the tribes, again, though he was a living on the Warm Springs Reservation, employee of the Warm Springs tribes, extensive experience, related experience.
That's who you're talking about.
Yeah. But he's a member of the Yakima Nation, so he's lived most of his life, you know, within 50 miles of Oregon, but understands the issues that face, law enforcement trying to respond in rural areas with different jurisdictions. But he just doesn't happen to be a member of one of the nine Oregon tribes.
Right. Questions? Okay. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak on this bill or anyone else signed up? Then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 590.
Thank you.
And open up a work session on Senate Bill 590.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 590 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 590 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Objection? Seeing none. So ordered, Senate Bill 590 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will ask Senator Telfer to carry this bill.
We didn't actually take a roll call, so.
Sorry.
Ask the unanimous consent to allow Senator Bonamici to vote on Senate Bill 590. See no objection.
Aye.
Senator Bonamici votes aye.
Did the rest of you vote no?
Yeah, we did.
It failed on a 1-4 vote. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 166.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Senate Bill 166 itself is replaced by the -1 amendments that were brought forward by the Department of Corrections, authorizing them to lease to the Department of Human Services the Milleron Road site in order for DHS to build and own and operate a hospital to provide diagnosis and evaluation, medical care, detoxification, social services, rehabilitation, and other services to individuals who are committed either through DHS or the state hospital. It declares emergency, would take effect upon passage. Although you have a revenue statement for this measure, you do not have a fiscal impact statement.
Which we could be getting today?
I believe so, but I don't know for sure, Senator.
Okay. And as you see, committee, this is entire, we're replacing the original bill. And we have Doug Young from Corrections.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas and members of the Senate Education and General Government Committee. I am Doug Young, New Prison Construction Administrator for the Oregon Department of Corrections. And I am here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 166 with the proposed -1 amendments. What this bill does is it clarifies the DOC's statutory authority to first lease the land at our Junction City site to the Department of Human Services, DHS, and secondly, it allows DHS to build and operate a state hospital on our site, and lastly, it allows DHS in the future to transfer the ownership of the state hospital buildings to DOC with the governor's approval. In conversations with the Department of Justice, it was advised that the statutes be amended to give DOC explicit authority to lease the Junction City site to DHS, so there would be no delay in building their facility.
Questions, Mr. Young? Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question. I understand the necessity of this. It's just for the record, my frustration that we are focusing resources on a second state hospital rather than focusing resources on community-based mental health services. And I think, to a degree, we have the cart before the horse. That's not an objection. It's just a statement of our bigger policy here. So.
Okay. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 166? If not, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 166. And I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 166. We do not have the fiscal report here yet today, committee, but if you're willing to suspend the rules, we'll need unanimous consent to do that. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 166.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 166. Discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 166 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Or is this a subsequent referral?
We're going to talk about sending it to Ways and Means.
I think it's just the authorization.
May I amend that motion?
Please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 166 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 166 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
I'm
not certain that the intent of the bill isn't just to give them the statutory authorization to do something. So I don't know what the fiscal is going to look like. I don't think it's an expenditure, but I can't tell because I just...
It's an authority.
Just an authority. So I'm not sure. Maybe Ways and Means can sort that out, or the President's desk can sort that out.
The President's desk can sort that out.
Yes.
Give them the discretion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we're... we are making a subsequent referral, but the president can rescind that if it's not necessary. So this just allows it to track there if that's where it needs to go.
Right. Understood.
Further discussion? Seeing none, are there objections to Senate Bill 166? Seeing none, so ordered, the motion passes, and the bill is recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration. Okay, see how easy these bills are?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the whole day will be that way.
Okay, that's a good shoot around, good warm up. I'm just going to go down through these in order. I'd like to open up a work session on Senate Bill 441. We've had this bill in front of us several times. It's been replaced a couple of different ways. And Dana, do you want to bring us up to date on the latest?
Yes.
And we'll let Senator Morris
absolutely
discuss.
You actually have before you, I think, two sets of amendments, dash threes and dash fours. And Senator Morris could speak to any of them, but I will indicate at least that both suspend certain school district reporting requirements, including the superintendent issuing school district performance reports, making alternative placements available to students, providing minimum salaries to substitute teachers, identifying talented and gifted students. The dash threes also include four task forces. The dash fours do not include any of those task forces.
So the dash fours are the same without the task force.
They are, and we do not have fiscal statements on the amendments.
Okay, Senator Morris, this was your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I would remind you of the report that we had back on, about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, with respect to issues, mandates, and the impacts of those mandates. And you'll recall that in the discussion, there was a range of positions that we're devoting to, in the vernacular of some folks, to essentially weighing the land as opposed to feeding the land. And so subsequent to that, we asked COSA to go back through and actually create an amendment for this bill that would suspend these activities that, while they are important in this state of financial crisis that we're in, would provide the opportunity to suspend for one biennium issues that probably are not material to direct curriculum instruction and the classroom activities. So we asked for two amendments. One is that's inclusive of the task forces that continue this discussion. And the second amendment, the dash fours, the dash three includes the task forces, and the dash fours exclude the task forces. So understanding the reluctance that we have to put in motion task forces, I wanted to have those considerations before you today, and I would suggest that we have Chuck Bennett and whoever else from COSA explain what we're doing with this bill.
Okay.
And what its potential impact would be in terms of benefit.
Hold on 1 second, Mr. Bennett. We have, I do want to call them up, but I also have the Department of Education, Morgan Allen and Cindy Hunt here to come up first, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education, and I brought reinforcements with me today in the person of Cindy Hunt. So we appreciate the committee's willingness to look at reducing some of the burden that mandates place on our schools. As you know, we've been working closely with COSA and a lot of other education partners and legislators at trying to reduce the paperwork burden on our schools. And sort of in that spirit, we wanted to share a couple thoughts. We had some of our senior staff review the Dash 4 amendments and wanted to share a couple thoughts and ideas with you about how they're currently written. And really, we're not really trying to get into a policy debate over the various items in there, but we wanted to bring to the committee's attention some potential legal issues and unintended consequences of this, as I assume that the legislature is going to want to work some more on this, so we wanted to get some things on the record. So we're going to work off the Dash 4 amendments. And I thought I'd start with a couple comments on Section 3. Section 3 suspends reporting requirements around school and district reports. One thing that we wanted to point out to the committee is that this could potentially jeopardize federal funding because schools would still be required to collect and disseminate this information by federal law. So it could potentially put us out of compliance with federal law. And then I thought what we'd do, Mr. Chair, is after we'd make a couple general comments after our sections, we'd stop and let the committee ask questions, and Cindy and I would do our best to answer them. So that's our sort of general comment on Section 3, and we'd be happy to answer questions about that one.
Sure.
Senator Cruz.
Just a general comment. Nothing in this prohibits them from doing it. It just removes the requirement. So, I look at several of these sections in here. I'm not sure that it necessarily changes the way business is conducted. It just is designed to give schools some flexibility. So, I understand your concern, but that may or may not be the result. So,
Moving on, Mr. Chair, in Section 6, which is on page 2 of the bill, some of our folks who deal with students who have drug and alcohol issues wanted to raise the issue that potentially with reductions to the Department of Human Services and Oregon Youth Authority that they're looking at in the upcoming biennium, that it's possible that a lot of the students who have drug and alcohol abuse issues that may be getting treatment or might be in residential programs may end up back in our schools because of reductions to those programs. So that was a concern a couple folks had. That's not really a legal issue, but just wanted to make the committee aware of that. Moving on to Section 11, we wanted to point out a couple things in Section 11. This talks about not requiring a minimum number of instructional days and instruction hours. And if the committee wanted to move this forward, there is currently no requirement that school districts in Oregon have a minimum number of instructional days. There is language regarding how long the calendar of the school year is. Instead, Oregon has chosen to require a minimum number of instructional hours by grade level. For example, grades 9 through 12 need 990 hours of instructional time throughout the course of the year. So we just wanted to clarify that. And one other thing that we wanted to add, although this provision would suspend that requirement, currently right now the superintendent and the department have the authority to allow districts to be out of compliance with that minimum instructional hour provision for up to 2 school years right now. So conceivably under current law and statute, a school district could fall below the minimal number of instructional hours required for up to 2 years right now as things are currently situated. So unless there's any questions about that, we'll move on. Section 12, we wanted to raise some potential concerns around special education law. If a student's individualized education plan under IDEA were to require counseling, and if a school district did not have a school guidance or counseling program, it would probably require the districts to seek private counseling services for those students. So that may be an unintended consequence although there are, I think the committee is well aware that just like school nurses and many other things, there are a shortage of counselors in our public schools, but those programs are still there, and that may run afoul of some IEP plans. Section 14, Ms. Hunt and I took a quick look just to confirm, and there are currently no laws or rules around class size, so that provision may just be able to come out in a later version because that's a local issue. School districts can allocate resources to instructional assistants and teachers and decide how big their class sizes are going to be.
Senator Boris, do you have some thoughts on Section 14, how that got there?
No, I would defer the question to Melissa.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, moving on, Section 15 on page 3. We just wanted to point out that the kindergarten readiness survey is actually a key performance measure for the Department of Education, and it's an Oregon Progress Board benchmark. So I just wanted to make the committee aware of that. If we remove that provision, that would impact our KPMs for the agency, and the folks at the Oregon Progress Board might be interested in that one as well. Section 16, this one, frankly, I'm not... I don't understand this one very well. I'll just suffice it to say that districts can already be out of compliance for up to a year and get a waiver for these standards provisions that are as they are described in Section 16. Cindy, did you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Cindy Hunt, Department of Education. The other thing that we're not certain about this is that the state board adopts standards, but school districts don't necessarily. What school districts do is adopt policies and practices that follow the state standards. So when we were looking at this, we think what the intent was is if a school district adopted a new policy or went to implement a new standard, then they would report. And then the other thing that we saw in this is it said that that they could go for a year without reporting that they were out of compliance, and then the next year they would report. So potentially they would go an extra year from currently without complying at all, and we would not necessarily know about it.
Moving on to Section 17, this one, I think we understand what the intent is here. If the committee wanted to move forward with this type of language, we would suggest a couple of tweaks. The first thing that I think everyone would need to understand is we couldn't completely suspend sort of the I guess for lack of a better term, the mailing or the delivering of these types of reports to parents, because if your school is a federal Title I school and they do not meet adequate yearly progress under No Child Left Behind, federal law requires the delivery of these types of reports to the parents. So even if we suspended it for most schools, there's still the potential that under federal law, schools would need to do this if you are a Title I school not meeting adequate yearly progress. And we've sort of looked at the language in Section 17, sort of compared it with federal law, and we'd probably need to tweak it a little bit if this is something the legislature wanted to do. I think the bill talks about having, upon request, this information available to parents. That probably would not satisfy federal legal requirements. We'd probably need to have some language in the more along the lines of, you know, it would have to be available, say, at the front desk at a school, you know, hard copies available, hard copies posted on bulletin boards or other public notices, newsletters, those types of things in the school. But there is a way where you could sort of get rid of the required, you know, for lack of a better term, sort of mailing out these report cards. But that would be a concern under the current language. And then moving on to Section 18, this one is kind of a biggie. The continuous improvement plans, just to sort of make it short and sweet, is how school districts meet a No Child Left Behind requirement that they have to submit a plan of accountability for how they use their federal funds. And if school districts were not required to update and submit their CIP plans, their continuous improvement plans, we have a concern that this might jeopardize, not only put us out of compliance with No Child Left Behind, but could also jeopardize how our school districts spend federal stimulus money that they're getting under Title I and IDEA. So that one, I think we'd have to take a closer look at as this makes it through the process. But, Mr. Chair, those are just a couple things that we wanted to, you know, we had a chance to review this, wanted to share our thinking with the committee and understand where folks are trying to get to this, but felt like we needed to get a couple of those things on the record and into the mix as we all decide what to do with this topic.
Okay. Thank you. Questions to the department? Senator Cruz?
Just a curiosity, Mr. Chair, on this last one. I'm just wondering what, if the school district, if their continuous improvement plan is exactly the same as it was the year before, why do it? Well, you know, because the way this is set up, any changes they make, they have to submit a new plan. So that's just duplicative paperwork. For what purpose?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, I think the reality is that for most school districts, they do make changes every year, especially in a lot of times in the area of special education. So they may not be substantial changes, but there are changes every year, and that's a document that the federal government looks at sort of as a base level document that needed to be in place in order to make sure those funds are there. So, again, our federal government has different ideas on how things should be done maybe than we do here in Oregon, but those are the current federal regulations.
Mr. Chair, it says in there if they make any changes and they have to file a new plan, and I just would opine that at some point in time we should take a look at all the federal regulations, because I think the money we get from the feds don't necessarily pay for all of the regulations we have to comply with, and we might want to reconsider that whole issue. But that's fair.
Okay, thank you both.
Thanks.
And Chuck Bennett.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, we certainly are very interested in what the department had to say about this. They were our partners in developing at least a portion of this list. So as they have concerns, we have concerns. But I think, Mr. Chairman, it's important to remember we're not talking about just everyday Oregon here or every biennium Oregon. We're talking about potentially massive cuts in funding for every program, including education. And if this were business as usual, we would probably be talking about a couple of these issues. But, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about, as we testified initially on this bill, about establishing flexibility at the local level to respond to the kind of budget shortfalls districts are going to be facing. And these amendments, thank you, Senator Morris, begin to address the kind of flexibility issues that are at stake. I don't think we probably have hit exactly right on every single issue, and there certainly is no question that these can be worked some more. But I want to underscore, nobody's asking to override federal law, nor would these bills override federal law. Federal law is federal law. Our reporting requirements are reporting requirements, and we're going to have to meet them. I think the questions that have been asked by the members of the department, I think, are well within the kind of discussion we need to continue to have around these various issues. I brought along my colleague, Craig Hawkins, who worked very closely with the department, to go through the bill if there were any of the sections the department hit on that you would like to have us either respond to or discuss. We'd be glad to. As a suggestion, and purely as a suggestion, Mr. Chairman, it might be possible to send this bill along, since it doesn't have its fiscal, down to Ways and Means, and we could continue to work out these, what I think are really small details that we can work out with the department. I think as they're described sometimes on the witness stand, they sound sometimes, I think, bigger than they are. Some of these really are tweaks, and I think that Morgan really hit it correctly on those. Others may be more substantive, but I think we need to have some sort of exploration of these issues, make sure we all are on the same page. But frankly, we support the amendments and are willing to move along with these. We think this is the kind of flexibility we're talking about at the local level we need to deal with this kind of budget crisis. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Morris?
For the record, Craig Hawkins from COSA, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, thanks for the nudge and the opportunity last time to do more. Pulled together a small group of folks from, I want to give them credit, Gladstone, Milton Freewater, Northwest Regional ESD, Salem-Keizer's Department, and COSA. And propose a number of the things that you see in these amendments. They really do save time and resources that can be redirected to other parts of other education priorities. Just want to echo what Chuck said, is that we support these and we think there's still work to do, and we hope to have you'll see your way clear to giving us the opportunity to do that. But really, I wanted to say thanks for the nudge.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Thank you for being here, and Senator Morris for coming up with this. We are in very, very difficult times, and I know I'm not sure that people quite grasp how serious when I'm out in the community how serious things are. But there's some things about this that really deeply concern me. For example, that districts are not required to identify talented and gifted students or provide educational programs and services to talented and gifted students. I'm very concerned about that because there are students in the schools who it's not like with special ed students where there's a requirement and hopefully some federal funding. Their needs aren't being met, and I'm afraid that if somebody sees this, it's going to be very problematic for those students. And I know that a lot of the dropout is attributable to students being bored and not getting the challenge that they need. So that concerns me greatly. I don't necessarily see it as a resource issue. If teachers can differentiate, I just am afraid that sends the wrong message. That and the I know we need flexibility with regard to instructional time, but I'm very, very worried about that message as well. We all know what happened with the Doonesbury, and we don't want to be back there. So I'm concerned. I appreciate the effort and the intent of this. I just remain concerned that some of the things will actually end up costing us more. For example, the drug and alcohol. I know that's expensive, but if that could end up costing more than less. So I applaud the effort. I'm just very concerned about the message that it sends.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonamici, so are we. We are not happy to be asking for this kind of latitude, and it may be that in further discussion and taking some additional time with this that some of the specifics you outlined can be adjusted, but I think it's important that we not sugarcoat this too much. The average student in Oregon's education will suffer under the kind of funding level we're talking about, let alone the specially challenged or gifted. We're talking about potentially huge class sizes in some districts. I mean, the other reality is this is a flexibility document. It's not a document like so many mandates that order you to do this or this or not do this or this. This merely says to a district, as you look at the fundamental goal of your district, you may look at some of these programs during this period as a way to assign your resources. If you're in Jordan Valley, the world looks a lot different than it does in Portland. And not that they would see a change in Jordan Valley. I have no idea how they're doing their budget this year. But I do know at smaller districts it can look a lot different. This just adds flexibility to the mix. If you can't give districts in the state of Oregon and the children in the state of Oregon enough funding, and I'm not suggesting that you not, nor are we suggesting that we not do TAG. Yeah, this is optional. This is funding optional. This is program optional. But what we need to do is have the kind of flexibility you all will have with our funding at the local level to respond to it. So I hope you'll work with us on this. I know you will. You have been. And I really understand your concerns, Senator. I don't want to in any way minimize them. They're the same ones I think all of us that love education have.
One thing, Chuck, that did come up is the restriction on size of classes imposed by the State Board for Education. Can you clarify what that was intended to get at?
Senator Hass, that wasn't part of our original set of recommendations. I'm not sure about that one.
Further questions?
Just a comment. What this does, and I hope we continue it down into Ways and Means, with a recommendation that they continue to explore all of those activities that do not add direct value to the classroom, given the financial crisis that we're in. But what this does, it really transfers to superintendents and their boards the ability to manage, as you say, Chuck, to better manage the resources for the benefit of the students in their districts. And if we're doing things that are nice but are not necessary, we need to take a hard look at those and give districts the flexibility to make those decisions in the best interests, which they do. They make it in the best interests of the large, in their district at large. And there are some things that we would love to do, but we can't do. So I see this as an opportunity for districts to become much more engaged in making those hard decisions as well.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. And Senator Morris, I do appreciate your leadership on getting this going, and I do want to keep this discussion going. And so my preference would be to send this to Ways and Means. If the committee is willing, we will need a unanimous consent to suspend our rules because we don't have the paperwork necessary yet since the amendments are still hot off the press. So if everybody's okay with that, we will take a motion to adopt the amendments, then move for unanimous consent, and then refer the bill.
Those are separate motions, however.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that the Dash 4 amendments are what we're concentrating on.
I think so. Yeah.
Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 441.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 441. Discussion? Seeing none.
I object, however, to the amendment. The
amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 441 without fiscal statements being available for review.
Senator Morris moves, requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended for purposes of voting on Senate Bill 441 without fiscal statements being available for review. Is there objection? If not, the rules are suspended for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 441.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 441 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 441 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommended that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion. Senator Bonamici.
You can let Senator Metzger go first. I'm thinking.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Morris. I know it's late in our Senate session and we're all dealing with these issues, so I don't want you to take any personal offense for what the efforts you're trying to do, and I support what you're trying to do in terms of our environment here. But I believe that some of the language in this amendment is something I just simply cannot support, even though I understand what you're trying to do, particularly on the reporting and the gathering of data. But there is some specificity in here that isn't, when you talk about two things in particular, and there's a number of them, but I'll just address two of them, that making alternative placements to students who aren't reaching standards. You know, to me, that's, you know, the idea that that will save us time and resources is probably right. I do believe that does have direct value, and that's sending a value statement that moving people to meet content standards is something that when times are tough, they have to drop off. The one about identifying talent gives the students is one thing. The next thing is providing that, as Senator Bonamici said, that you do not have to provide educational programs to the best and brightest students among us. So if you're on either end, we're telling you our value statement is you can be dropped off and not have to be dealt with. We don't have to provide challenges for you, and we don't have to bring you up. And I understand everything is going to be difficult. I understand the funding for some of these programs, which already is not very good in some cases, may be even more difficult to meet the levels that we want throughout the continuum. But to me, those are policy statements and saying that as we look to balance our resources, the first places we should make a statement that you don't need to put any resources in are those who can't meet standards and those who need more challenges. And as you know, I've worked very, very hard with my staff on providing additional options for kids, trying to bolster our talent and gifted, because those kids are our future and they already feel we're ignoring them. And to make those policy statements in this bill, even though it's going to be challenging to meet I think as everyone has said, all the resources, is something that I just cannot support. I mean, the idea of reporting, which is important, but does not rise to that level, in 2 years of difficult budget is one thing. But when you say we don't say you have to provide those services of any kind, I think is a value statement that I can't support.
Thank you. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Chair Haas. And I agree with a lot of what Senator Metzger said, including thanks to Senator Morse for making this effort. It is, as I said earlier, a very, very difficult time, and I know it's going to be tough, but I have concerns about other specific areas as well, guidance and counseling programs. I think that there's going to be a greater need with families struggling for things like guidance and counseling programs and to send a message that that's not important. I think everything that is here is intended to be for the benefit of students. Yes, there are some things that could probably be done without, but the level of specificity and the message that we're sending is something that concerns me greatly.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I think I would have almost preferred to see a bill just to suspend all mandates for 2 years, and then we wouldn't be singling out specific areas. Because quite honestly, I don't think that allowing this flexibility necessarily is going to change the way schools are operating. And but by the same token, allowing them some flexibility to make discrete and distinct decisions at the school level, I think, is critical at this point in time. And I think probably no two school districts are going to probably make the same sorts of decisions, but it does come down to what you can do with a more limited pot of money. And I mean, my initial idea, Mr. Chair, was just to suspend all mandates because, you know, then there's fire safety and stuff like that. I guarantee you the schools aren't going to suddenly say, whoopee, we don't have to be safe anymore. But, I just think that flexibility at this point in time and maybe the potential of reducing some reporting and some requirements that don't actually have direct impact on the classroom is a very good tool that we should be able to offer to schools to help them bridge the gap between now and the point in time when our economy starts to grow again.
Thank you. Senator Morris.
I know it's very, very difficult to look backward. We tend to think progressively and how can we improve education. And it's not just education, it's all areas of public policy. But these are not normal times. These are, we're in a period of time that is probably unprecedented. And when I look back on the education that my children received, my son and my daughter, it was about 20 years ago. And they received one heck of an education. And when you think about the amount of mandates that we put on the system to do this and do that and do this and do that, by suspending these mandates, it doesn't mean that we're reducing the quality of education. What we're doing with these mandates is we're saying to the school boards, we know that you're not going to have sufficient resources, but we will give you the ability to manage in a way that you don't now have to manage. So, Mr. Chair, I agree with the comments. I mean, we hate to think about going backwards, but we're in a pickle.
And that may be the understatement of the day.
Mr. Chair, can I just add one thing I forgot to say? Is that I am, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned about the areas where we risk losing federal funding, especially with regard to Title I schools and the federal requirements, and I would very much like to see changes to the No Child Left Behind. I wish we could do that here in this building, but unfortunately we can't. But I'd be concerned about losing federal funding by some of the areas raised here. So.
Okay, so we have a motion before us with the Dash 4 amended bill to refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
Mr. Chair, can I just ask for a clarification of the motion, please?
The bill will be recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration to be sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And is there a recommendation in the motion?
It does have a do pass recommendation, so sorry, on the motion.
Thank you.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonnici?
No.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Vice Chair Morse?
Aye.
Chair Haas?
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration to be sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay. Open up a public hearing and close a work session on Senate Bill 441 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 633.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 633 is the Iran divestiture bill. The Dash 4 amendments before you, actually have threes and fours, but we've probably talked about the fours, which we have fiscal and revenue statements for. They direct the Oregon Investment Council and the State Treasurer to ensure that investment funds are not invested in violation of applicable federal law in any company that is doing business in Iran. They do not have any provisions dealing with Sudan. They do not have any provisions dealing with reporting to the Legislative Assembly. It does have an emergency clause, and the measure would take effect upon passage.
Okay. Colleagues, we have no one here to testify on this bill. I have been in many consultation with Senator Boquist, the sponsor, in the Treasurer's Office, and even the Attorney General's Office. And they are all supportive of the Dash 4 amendment.
Well, then let's do it.
I'm sorry, you said, did I see the...
We do have a fiscal statement on the Dash 4 as well as the revenue statement.
So all we really need to do is to take a vote.
Motion out, Mr. Chair, and I think I put it away.
Are we ready to go, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 633.
Senator Morse moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 633. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Senator.
Senator Metzger.
I hate to be the dissenter here, but and I realize the way, I appreciate how this bill has been changed in terms of not trying to interfere with the fiduciary duty of the Oregon Investment Council with its beneficiaries. But I still, there's two issues here. Number one is I'm always concerned about a unit of our government, us, the state of Oregon, you know, reaching out into international affairs, number one, regardless of how we personally feel. And also our federal government, the new administration, I know, is working very hard to change relationships with some other countries. And it's I understand the bill essentially doesn't do much, but I still have concerns over overreaching where we should be, and I would like to politely say I will oppose this bill.
Okay. Thank you for your politeness, Senator. No need to around here. We're all...
Some of us don't know that I am. But.
Is there further discussion? Senator Morris, Senator, I'm sorry, Senator Metzger objects. Any other objections? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 633 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 633 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonnici?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Vice Chair Morris?
Aye.
Chair Haas?
Aye. The motion passes, and Senator Boquist is assigned to carry it on the floor. Oh, I'll close the hearing on work session on Senate Bill 633 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 920 for referral purposes only.
Yes, Senate Bill 920 permits the special state school fund grant to the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program, declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2009. It does currently have a referral to finance revenue, although we do not have the fiscal statements.
So we will need a rule suspension?
We would.
Mr. Chair, I move unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 920 without fiscal statements being available for review.
Senator Morris requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended for purpose of voting on Senate Bill 920 without fiscal statements being available for review. Is there objection? If not, the rules are suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference. Is there discussion? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment that this is a sensational program, and I've had some personal experiences with that with young people in our public schools who basically are on their way to the jail cell and are now upstanding students because they got this opportunity. It has just been it's amazing. You know, not everybody succeeds everywhere, but it's amazing what this program has done for some kids and nothing else works. So I'm very much supportive of moving this bill forward.
I know we'd find something he'd like eventually.
Yeah. took six bills, but we got there. Further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the bill is sent to the Committee on Finance and Revenue.
Yep.
And I will close that work session on 920 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 738.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 738 was before us earlier this month, and it deals with providing access to accelerated college credit programs. And I am passing down fiscal statements that just came in. If you could pass them along, we could. Maybe members would like a moment to review that. Two pager. The plan was to add a referral to Ways and Means for this measure.
This is one I might remind the committee of the stellar cast of sponsors on this legislation.
Yes, that was well orchestrated, I believe.
Senator Metzger, do you have any comments?
No, I appreciate the this gets kind of to my earlier comment about just trying to provide other opportunities and whether this again, our current environment is something that will work. I don't know, but it does look at those issues of trying to find what other things that we can do for our kids, and having the ways I'm comfortable having the Ways and Means Committee weigh its placement among other issues.
Okay,
this Mr.
Morris
postpones the fiscal into the next biennium. As I understand the amendment, is that correct?
Yes. So
we're essentially.
We don't need unanimous consent. We are just ready to add the amendment.
Ways and Means.
And send it to Ways and Means.
Okay. In light of our previous discussion on mandates, I'm taking pause.
We're nothing if not consistently inconsistent.
But in the context of setting the wheels in motion for another budget period, it is a good piece of policy. So with that, Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 738.
Senator Morris moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 738. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 738 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Sorry. It's not by prior reference.
It's not by prior reference.
Sorry.
Just a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Senator Morse moves Senate Bill 738 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if the fiscal on this has been delayed till the next biennium, and so this just becomes a policy bill, why are we sending it to Ways and Means?
Well, the fiscal is on the Dash 1 amendment.
It's indeterminate, but there's clearly one shows up in the next biennium. But I
can comment on that.
Senator Metzger.
I think Senator Cruz just trying to get away from the idea that just because this next biennium is not going to have a fiscal impact, that it's probably proper for them to still look at that. And I'm comfortable with them doing that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonaventure.
Thank you. I am one of the sponsors on this bill, and I want to thank Senator Metzger and his staff for putting the bill forward, and I know your staff, Senator Metzger, came around and talked to me, and we're very persuasive about the need for these accelerated opportunities, particularly in rural areas, and that's the reason why I support the bill. However, I'm concerned about the sort of big picture that particularly with things like AP exams that students need to buy challenge. And, you know, the College Board rep was here and talking about incentive programs to get students to take AP exams, which of course wouldn't surprise me since College Board sells the curriculum and gets paid for every single test, AP test that every single student takes. And I want to send a pretty strong message to the schools and the districts that students shouldn't have to pay for challenge, and the district shouldn't have to pay extra to get challenge into their classrooms. And I hope that, as soon as we get out of the financial situation that we're in, we take a good hard look at the way our model is with the perception that students have to pay for these AP classes and AP tests or IB classes and IB tests to be challenged in school, because I don't think that that's true. And I'd like to see us take a good hard look at that as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
It's still a pretty amazing list of sponsors, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator
Cruz?
Aye.
Senator
Metzger? Aye.
Vice Chair Morse?
Aye.
Chair Hass?
Aye. The measure passes, and it will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on 738, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 344.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the County Assessors and Surveyors Bill. The Dash A4 amendments remove the assessors. If adopted, the measure would apply only to the appointment of county surveyors. We do have fiscal and revenue statements. The fiscal statement indicates that there is no fiscal impact.
So we're just unelecting surveyors here. I talked to Senator George about this, and he is the one who drafted this amendment and is fine with it. Discussion? Okay.
Ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 344.
Senator Morse moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 344. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz.
I think I would have been comfortable if the amendment would have required the county to take affirmative action to making it appointed rather than affirmative action to keep it elected.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 344 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 344 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Metzger.
It's a lot better than it was the first time. That was it.
Thank you.
I'll be in support.
And the assessors, thank you, too. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Morse? Aye.
Chair Hatch?
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator George will carry it.
We do. I would recommend that we recess for a minute, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's do that. We'll stand in a 5-minute recess for purposes of getting our papers in order. And getting correspondence coming down the hall.
Thing left, right?
Yes, it is. We've got some fiscal reports coming to and fro.
Okay.
We are in recess.
Oh, I think they're on their way, but
okay.
I'm sure they're not here yet.
hearing, I'm sorry, we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 676, Senate Bill 767.
Mr. Chair, can I do a little overview?
Please do.
A little.
We brought our dinner, so go ahead.
It won't be like that. You have four sets of amendments in front of you. The 16s, 17s, and 19s are almost entirely identical. So you've got additional reporting requirements for virtual schools. You would have a work group, have a moratorium. The dash 16s would, these aren't really even in play, so if you've tuned me out already, then it won't matter. But the 16s would repeal the moratorium as of July 1st, 2010. The 17s would repeal the moratorium as of July 1st, 2011, as would the 19s. The 19s, however, specify a date for the enrollment freeze, which would be May 1st, 2009, and they add a parent to the work group. The 17s, which came from Senator Morse, and I understand Senator Cruz supports them, put together the Oregon Online Education Task Force related to public charter schools. They provide for the membership, they provide the charge to the task force, and they also impose a moratorium on approving charters that would become sponsors of virtual schools, and they removed that prohibition as of January 1st, 2010. We have fiscal and revenue statements on the 17s, even though in the summary of the 17s it says it's on the dash 16s. We've confirmed that that's a typo. The date of the moratorium expiring on the dash 17 fiscal statement is correct, 2011. And that's all I can think of to say, Senator.
Sir, could you say that last sentence again, please?
Which
one was the typo?
In the dash 17 fiscal statement.
And it's the fiscal. Okay, thanks.
It says
the dash 16 amendment to Senate Bill.
Got it.
But the dates are reflected properly in that summary.
So if this wasn't all complicated enough, and if we didn't have enough wrenches thrown into this, we have a new one from the Department of Education suggesting that we need yet another change because of federal grants to charter schools, having a state law that prohibits a certain segment of charter schools from opening or growing may impact our ability to be awarded additional grant funds. So we have not had time to draft amendments to deal with that.
Mr. Chair, if we adopted the dash 18s, we wouldn't have that problem.
So we're unable to send this directly to the Senate floor today. And given the deadline of today, our next available option is to have this referred to the President's desk, to the Rules Committee, which has a longer deadline and which can make these necessary changes. So we do have fiscal reports, as you heard, on the 16s and 17s. We do not have a fiscal report on the dash 19 amendments that were requested by Senator Metzger, and we would need unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to refer the 19s to the Rules Committee. And Senator Metzger, would you mind updating us on what your changes would do?
But there are two changes in that from the dash 17s that we have the fiscal statement on. The only two changes, and I will talk them in specificity here. The first change is on page 17 of the dash 19, and it's lines 3 and 4. It adds representatives of parents of students who are enrolled in a public charter school that provide online instruction as part of the work group. So they were not in the dash 17, and I think children should be represented in that work group. And then on page 18, Mr. Chair, line 19, when we set the base number for online instruction, I put a specific date, in this case May 1, 2009, later this week, so that we get to the intent, which is the current students. And my concern there was, when this bill took effect, it's possible even nobody would be receiving online education because the school year would be over, and I just think we wanted to clarify that we were making a freeze with the current enrollment and make sure that there was no ambiguity there.
No. Because we don't have year-round school yet.
We're still studying that.
Okay.
A couple years.
Yeah, we'll probably have that next cycle. So that's where we are, committee. Discussion?
No.
Open it up.
No, I'll wait.
Well, let's is there any motion?
We have no motions in front of us.
Are you taking testimony, Mr. Chair?
We are not taking the testimonies. We're not up for a public hearing today. You have a comment, general comment?
Well, I understand where the will of the committee is, and as a vice chair, I will make the appropriate motions, but I am opposed to the 16, 17s, and 19s. I believe that if we're going to, while I don't necessarily disagree with most of the things we're actually going to be embedding in statute, there are some things that are troublesome that are required and would be embedded in statutes. And to do that prior to a work group, the intent of the work group is to find a rational administrative structure that assures quality and assures a appropriate curriculum and all of the things that we all want to have happen. To embed so much in a very granular way into the state statutes ahead of that work group, I think it is a major disservice to those people that participate in that work group to try to find the solution. So I won't speak to the specific issues that I find troublesome. I do appreciate Senator Metzger's clarification. The moratorium effectively, in a very, I think, surreptitious way, would eliminate charter online schools. And I think that you picked that up, and I do appreciate that. The whole issue of making sure that we do not negatively impact our awards of grants, I think, is a very valid issue. And for that reason, I'll support moving this to rules. But I think we've set in motion a very interesting process. So if there's any further discussion, I'll...
Well, Mr.
Thank you.
Chair.
Senator Cruz?
I'll be a little more specific with the majority of my objections, I think, are in Section 8, which is... I mean, why are we putting this stuff in statute and then creating a work group to look at what we need to put in statute? Quite honestly, I do think that the reason I'm going to support rule suspension is because I do think the 19s are better. But, Mr. Chair, in my humble opinion, I think the 18s are the real solution that can get us to something more definitive by our February special session, and I wish that was the direction we were going. Unfortunately, it is not, and the other disappointment I have at this point in time was I was looking forward to doing a minority report out of this committee on this bill, and now I'm losing that opportunity.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a sort of big picture and a little picture comment. My big picture comment is that I see that this process as being very open, and I know there was a comment about something being done surreptitiously, and that certainly I know is not the intent of anyone on the committee, nor was it the intent of any of the sponsors of the bill that I certainly know of. I see the Section 17 moratorium is just a standstill while we do take a closer look. And I was out, I had a couple meetings out in my district this weekend, and we were talking about this issue, and people are very concerned. They have a lot of questions. And so I think that it's appropriate to say, hold things now where we are, and I think that's the intent of this, while we take a look at what's the best policy. That's something that I do support. I think we do need to put a hold on things until we get a closer look. My little thing is I asked just a little while ago about page 10 on line 2, where there's a plan to conduct biweekly meetings between teachers and students, either in person or through the use of conference calls or other technology. I'm very much concerned about the connection between the students and the teachers and how frequently they're communicating. So I asked my staff to look up whether biweekly means twice a week or every other week, because that's very different. And, you know, it's either one meeting every 2 weeks or two meetings a week. And my staff just let me know that, unbelievably, it means both or either. So I would request some clarification on what biweekly meetings means, because I think it's important to have...
Both?
So my comment is that I think we need to do more work on this bill, but make sure that there's, you know, in terms of policy, make sure that there are regular meetings between the teachers and the students. So thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for your
thank you for checking on that, too. Okay. And I certainly kind of want to echo all of those comments. And, you know, I think part of these new discoveries we find on here are a testament to the fact that there should be further study and a more deliberative process than what we have here in these final days and weeks of the session. And as fascinating as this issue is, at least to me, however, I don't want us to lose sight of what we're in the midst of here, in that while this is a very significant issue for many students and many families, it is still representative of less than 1% of our students in our 560,000 school system. And they're going to experience budget cuts like they've never experienced before. And that overshadows, to me, a lot of some of these public policy decisions we're making on this and kindergarten and AP classes and other things. So I think it's important to kind of keep a lot of this in perspective. Senator Morris, would you like
to move? I move to adopt the Dash 19 amendments to Senate Bill 767.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 19 amendments to Senate Bill 767. Discussion? We do that next. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 767 without fiscal statements being available for review.
Senator Morris requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended for purpose of voting on Senate Bill 767 without fiscal statements being available for review. Is there objection? If not, the rules are suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 767 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend that the bill be referred to the Rules Committee.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 767 as amended to the floor without recommendation, recommended that it be referred to the Rules Committee. Is there discussion?
Yeah.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but the issue about the federal funds, I think, is well pointed out, and in a larger context, that there's still just things keep rolling in that need further discussion, and I think this is appropriate way to buy a little more time also to see the final product of this. And as you know, Mr. Chair, I am on the Rules Committee, so that's why I say I don't know if that's a lucky thing or not. I get to start all over again. I do wish to carry the will of the committee as a whole on amendments to the Rules Committee. So I think on some of those issues, as Mr. Chair, those are developed, and, you know, as you sense the sense of the committee on that, I'll do my best to be an advocate for those changes in the Rules Committee.
I appreciate that very much. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, could we please have a clarification of the motion? I'm sorry. What was the motion, please?
Senator Morris moved as amended to the floor without recommendation and recommended that it be referred to the Rules Committee.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think Senator Morris moved due pass.
He did. I think he did move.
It was with
I did, but I like your motion better, Mr. Chair.
I just want to know what
my bad. Can I amend my motion?
I'm reading off the script. Senator Morris moved Senate Bill 767 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommended that it be referred to the Rules Committee.
That was the motion I made.
Yes.
Yes.
Further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, if if the maker of the motion would prefer a different motion, I think we ought to be willing to entertain that.
Well, I'd be comfortable if we moved to the vote.
With a recommended to pass. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm fine. Let's vote.
Okay, the measure adopt the amendment is adopted.
No, excuse me. Oh, the amendment.
The amendment is adopted. And Senator Morse.
I think I just moved.
He already made the
motion. I'm
sorry.
I already moved. So
I just wanted a clarification because it was stated different from.
Well, we cleared it.
The amendment, right. We suspend the rules. The motion now.
The clerk will call the roll.
There we go.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Mr. Morse?
No.
Chair Hatch?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration to be sent as amended to the Rules Committee.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. Okay, so that clears our agenda.
So we're done with Senate bills?
I don't know. Do we have anything else? Are we all of the fiscal paperwork?
Okay. What about 652? Did we do?
We were not doing anything.
Oh, that one's. Okay.
Any other business before the committee?
Oh, yeah, I marked it out.
Seeing none, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Indeed.